Good morning. We'll call the Sussex County Council meeting for May 7th, 2013 to order. Mr. Lawson, approve the agenda.
Good morning, Mr. President. Thank you. We can amend the agenda this morning by striking executive session and possible action on executive session items.
Entertain a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
You got it.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Wilson, second, Mr. Phillips. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried. We had no minutes to approve. Correspondence, Mr. Moore?
There is none, Mr. President.
Woman Council, any correspondence?
Oh, yes,
Mrs.
I got
Deaver.
I got an announcement that the Selbyville Public Library Board of Commissioners is having a dedication of their Selbyville Oral History Collection, honoring families and descendants of those who participated in recording their personal histories. Happen to know there's a book there called Breaking New Ground by an original Townsend, and very interesting. It's May 19th, and they're going to have a celebration at 2 o'clock. That's 11 South Main Street in Selbyville. And I received this. These are books, Homeowner's Handbook to Prepare for Natural Hazards. I've heard a lot of other folks already have it, but I didn't. And if we don't have them, I think maybe we should have this. It's online, too. This information is on. This is from the University of Delaware. I'll send them around.
Okay. Anything else, Ms. Deaver?
That's all. Thank you.
Anything else from Council?
Yeah, I got to thank you from the Henlopen Senior Center for helping us with their issue.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Drainage problems.
Anything else from Council? Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. First item of business this morning is a presentation of Memorial Poppy from the members of the American Legion Post 28 Auxiliary who are here today to hand out their annual poppies. Thank you. Please come forward.
Good morning. My name is Cindy Phillips. I'm from the American Legion Auxiliary Unit 28. We're on 24, right in the Long Neck area. And I have my husband, he's a Legionnaire, Dick Phillips, with me today. I want to thank you for allowing me to come to present the American Legion Auxiliary Memorial Poppy to you. Since World War I, this has come to symbolize the lives that have been given in service of this country. From a poem to a program, the poppy, which is handmade by veterans, has become the means by which we remember and pay homage to our veterans, to our deceased veterans, and you also help the hospitalized and disabled veterans whenever you donate to a poppy. Donations for poppies go toward assisting the hospitalized and disabled veterans in the local area. It can't be used for anything else. Not only are you helping, but you are also showing everyone that you remember the sacrifices made by our veterans. So before I pass them out to you, I'd like to close with a poem that was written by Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae. He wrote this in response to the sights that he saw at the end of the war where the men were had laid dying in the fields in France and the poppies were blooming. It's called In Flanders Fields. In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow between the crosses row on row that mark our place. And in the sky, the larks, still bravely singing, fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago, we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved. And now we lie in Flanders Fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you, from failing hands we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders Fields. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Cole has a...
Thank you. We have something for you, yes.
Yeah. Kim.
He's finally got something to do, George. That's good. Good. Thank you. It's nice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your work. Thank you.
And I've got something for you.
And I've got
you guys over there. There we go. It's a tribute. I don't know if it's a new tribute, but the council has given me the honor, given you, which we do annually, $200 this year for the puppies.
Thank you very much.
I think we upped it a little bit, yeah. And now you'll be able to get some more puppies. So
thank you.
Good work.
Cost of living is.
Thank you very much for all you do.
Cost of living, I guess.
Thank you. Mr. Lawson?
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is a presentation by Sally Beaumont. Sally is the chairperson of the Sussex County Advisory Committee on Aging and Adults with Physical Disabilities. She's here to give us an update on the upcoming live conference. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
I am your current chair of the Sussex County Council Committee on Aging for Persons with Physical Disabilities. I come from Mr. Phillips' district. I was appointed several years ago. I'm much happier these days because some of you have appointed some new people. And I'd like to introduce a couple of new people. Scott Phillips from Mr. Phillips District.
Another Phillips. Okay.
And now Fran's been on the committee. She's from Mr. Wilson's district. And we have Jamie McGee. And Jamie's from Mr. Cole's district. Penny Orndorff is from Mr. Cole's district. And Larry Savage is from Joan Davis' mm-hmm. district. Mm-hmm. And we've had a real renewal of energy. And in fact, I've spent some time with Todd kind of regrouping over the last 6 months and so forth. And I'm just very excited, not only with the new people, but we've had at least 40 or 50 new agencies who've been coming to our meetings and wanting to be involved. Mm-hmm. As an outgrowth of that, we have put together a conference, or we are hoping to have a conference. And I wanted to, we've had two planning meetings so far. Let me just. And I'm here mainly because I want you to know we're actually doing something. But also because I'd like your help and participation. We really think that this LIVE conference, Live Healthy, Live Active, and Live at Home, mm-hmm. and all of us in Sussex County know that we are, the tsunami of seniors is with us and continues to come. And this conference, we did a needs assessment, and the number one thing people want to do is stay at home. And then we started brainstorming, and basically, they want to stay here and live in Sussex County. They want to be healthy, they want to be active, and they want to be at home. So that's our theme. And all of the themes are going to be done through this conference. We're going to forge here. And please put this in your book, October 9th, 9 to 4. I'll be speaking more with Todd and Mr. Vincent. I'd like you guys to kind of do a little kickoff to start, because we are doing this as an outgrowth of the committee. And we are trying to engage as many consumers and agencies as possible that deal with the senior population, either in service delivery, advocacy, or whatever, and with people with physical disabilities. The good news is that Bill Love, who is the executive director of the Division on Aging and Persons with Physical Disabilities, is very excited. He's going to be our keynote about the Affordable Act and what's going to happen to us on January 1st, 2014 when we wake up, and how our healthcare delivery might be different. We're going to invite the CEOs and have a panel of CEOs. But as I said, the theme will all be around being healthy, active, and staying at home. He's going to be one of the sponsors, he told me. I just kind of put together a little budget here. But we're going to charge $5 a person so we can get as many people as we can. We're going to have vendors, for-profit, not-for-profit. And one of the things that's really come out in our Sussex County meetings is that people want to network. Not only people who get paid to do it, those who are working in agencies, but we get so many consumers that are volunteering their time and wanting to assist other seniors to be active, be healthy, and stay home. So basically, that's my message to you, is that the committee is active and working, and we think this conference will be the first of many in the future.
The date.
And okay. I think that's about it. I do have a survey that we did of the community that Scott Phillips put together for us. I think you might have gotten this in your minutes, but I'm just going to give one minute.
It's really true how many more agencies we have that are involved with our committee.
And I think that's it. Is there anything else that I've forgotten? Ed? Do we have any?
You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Any questions of council?
Questions?
The job gets bigger and bigger all
can
the time.
Can you? Can you maybe summarize the survey refresh us and the rest of the...
Scott. Scott, let me tell you, this survey was done in the clouds. I don't know if you know what the cloud is. No, it's this new internet thing. And he actually designed it. And I just give us a couple of minutes. I know, not even.
Oh, one of those.
Because he's so much better at telling you a little bit about it.
Yeah. Good morning, esteemed council members. I'll make this quick so as not to bore you further. As part of our strategic plan that was developed last year, one of the main goals was to develop a consortium of advocate groups for the elderly and disabled populations in Sussex County to validate the needs and identify potential solutions. Okay, as Sally alluded to, one of the initial action steps was to send out a survey to affiliated organizations to determine the degree of interest in joining such a group and the level of commitment they might make towards its success. In January this year, a questionnaire was sent out by email to approximately 90 people, of whom the committee had email addresses. Another 10 people for whom there was no address, they were sent out questionnaires by U.S. mail. People were given a choice of completing the survey either online or by printing it out and returning it. A total of 42 responses were received from 38 different organizations, and that a very respectable return rate of plus 40%. The questions, are you interested in being part of this new coalition? Nearly three quarters of the respondents replied that they were interested in joining. Question, how often do you think the coalition should meet? And respondents said most frequently quarterly. What day and time would be best to hold the meetings? The most people answered the morning, and Monday, then Wednesdays were the most favored days. Where should the coalition meetings be held? Nearly two-thirds of the respondents thought a fixed location in central Sussex would be most convenient, and the potential meeting place of the senior centers was thought was very popular. Okay. Respondents were asked, would you volunteer to help with the coalition? And about half the people said that they could volunteer. And another 38% responded that they were uncertain but didn't rule out the possibility. Asking how much time they thought they'd be able to volunteer, the most popular answer, 38%, 29%, estimates were one or more hour per month. Largest number of responses were in the 1 to 5 hours of volunteer time per month. Okay, what do you want from the coalition? The two options which garnered the most responses were identifying relevant issues and desired outcomes and offering solutions to decision makers. What can you and your organization bring to the coalition? Unfortunately, we didn't have any volunteers for resources or finances, but a lot of commitment and dedication was volunteered. Leadership skills, meeting location was also popular. Would you be willing to serve on a coalition committee? About one quarter responded definitely, and nearly two-thirds of the people said perhaps, depending on the nature of the committee and their own situation at the time. Would you be willing to serve on a planning committee for the annual conference, which Sally's been talking about? The volunteer enthusiasm increased on this particular question, perhaps due to its you know, definitive nature, where a third of the people said that they were definitely interested in serving. As far as being asked, do you have anything to add, such as suggestions, ideas, problem areas that should have priority? A number of people answered health care, transportation, which shouldn't surprise you. And in conclusion, again, this 40% response rate we felt was very encouraging. The majority of the responses were positive in nature, and you know, the number, the variety of different respondents representing all these different organizations, we thought would bring to the coalition a great mix and a large, you know, a great number of resources in sending forth. So, any questions?
Question to council.
Is this survey available to the press?
I don't think so.
You know, okay, on health care, can I say something?
Yes,
I was at the Georgetown Chamber of Commerce meeting this last month, and we had a speaker from Peninsula Regional Hospital, and they are opening up a medical complex on 113 in Millsboro. And there was a new doctor there who just wanted to say hi and let us know. We do have a new doctor coming, and I can name her if you feel that that's improper or if you think I would, you know.
What's her name?
Her name. She's Lisa M. Bartels, B-A-R-T-E-L-S. She's at 10 North Front Street, Georgetown. She is a family physician. She was there at the meetings. I just wanted you to know about her. She gave me some cards and asked me to circulate them. It's good to have a new doctor in town.
I could imagine this conference growing into a major event. Sussex County, of course, is the destination for a lot of retirees, and certainly by the response to the survey is an indication there is a foundation of support. I think 500 would not surprise me this year, and you may have to look for a larger location in the future.
We were all sitting there, and it's just incredible. The effect of these people that would be in the planning, it said, yes, definitely 14, but we've had over 20 people have come to the planning meetings. We've had two planning meetings in the last, every 2 weeks we've been meeting to get as far as we've gotten.
How much money will you need from Sussex County Council?
Well, we know, Scott and I, Todd and I talked a little bit. We've been going back and forth via email. We don't really, this was just a kind of a preliminary budget. I have a call in and an email in to Bill Love to see what this Division on Aging is going to do as a sponsor. And from what I understand, we should be able to get quite a bit of vendor money because it's a way of getting the word spread out. I can't really give you, I don't think it's a good idea for me to give you a number right now.
Well, I don't want to speak for my colleagues, but I think you'll find a lot of support here. I think we all understand how important your demographic and your efforts mean to this county.
The thing that I love about this is that we're finally getting the word out. Mm-hmm. You know, more people are coming to our meetings, and silly me, I have goosebumps, but it's just so exciting, you know, after so many years of sitting there and like thinking, what are we supposed to do? And my colleague here helping us to try to stir up more interest and enthusiasm. But the number one thing people kept coming saying, we want a network. We want the information. And that's why we thought if we get this coalition started, it'll be not us, but it'll be a new group, that they can go off and do what they need to do, and we'll have a group of individuals that can handle the questions that come in. I mean, we get people, I'm going to lose my home because I can't pay my taxes. Where do I go? You know, all these kinds of things. So basically, that's really what we're trying to do, because everything, as you know, is so fragmented here. There's so many wonderful opportunities, so many wonderful people out there to help our people, but we just don't know where they are.
Well, you're working with First State Community Action Agency also.
Sure, I'm sure.
Good.
Mm-hmm. But they're very helpful. Okay, any other questions on? Thanks for your time. I didn't expect to take this much time.
That's fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Lawson. I'm sorry. That's true. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Next item of business on the agenda is a presentation by members of the Sea Level Rise Committee. We're joined today by members including Susan Love, and Susan's going to start. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. Oh, look. There it is. Hi, thank you very much for inviting me today. I'm very glad to be able to provide council with an update of the Sea Level Rise Advisory Committee activities that have been ongoing. Sussex County is a member of the Sea Level Rise Advisory Committee for the state, and Jeff Shockley has been serving in that role as a very active member of our committee, and we do appreciate your efforts, Jeff. We also, in the room, is another one of my committee members, and that is Rich Collins, has been serving on our committee for nearly 3 years. Rich makes all of our meetings very interesting and brings a lot of good points we wouldn't have otherwise have heard about.
He does the same with us sometimes.
I hear he does that for a lot of people.
You can always depend on that.
But this presentation is about sea level rise, not Rich Collins. We can do a whole nother one on him later on. I'd be happy to come back for that. I'm sorry, Rich. It's just sometimes it's so easy. So what I wanted to do, while my slides are coming up, the Sea Level Rise Advisory Committee is a committee that was put together by DENREC Secretary Colin O'Mara. We had our first meeting in November of 2010. Yes, it has been almost 3 years that we have been working on this, even though I initially said it would be a year and a half. We are doing a lot of very good work and have had significant amounts of public involvement. The purpose of this committee was twofold. One, to put together an assessment of Delaware's vulnerability to this issue of sea level rise. And the second one was, once that was completed, once we had identified the problem, then to put together some potential solutions for that problem. We've made significant progress, and we are almost to the end of our initiative at this point. The Sea Level Rise Advisory Committee is comprised of 24 members. When we initially envisioned the committee, I wanted no more than 12, because 12 is really the maximum at which you can get things done. I got 24. I blame that on how long it's taken. But having this very wide breadth of people at the table with us talking about these issues has been very, very helpful. It's made the plan a lot better. It's gotten a lot of different points of view. So we have all of the state agencies sitting on the committee. We have all three counties. We have the League of Local Governments. And then we have business and environmental organizations, as well as the university, sitting around that table talking about the issues, coming up with solutions for these issues. The reason that it is so important is that sea level rise has a wide variety of impacts in the state of Delaware, and they are set out in the vulnerability assessment. I left Jeff with two additional hard copies of our vulnerability assessment, which was recently completed. It's a large volume with lots of maps. It's very an interesting read right before you go to bed. It'll help you sleep. We looked at 79 different resources throughout the state to see what the impact of sea level rise might be. And I'll talk a little bit about that more in a second. But really, short-term sea level rise, you can see sea level rise in a couple of ways. And one is that you may be starting to see an increased extent of flooding and damage during storms. Because the sea levels have been creeping up, inching up over each decade, when we have the same kind of storm surge that we did in the 60s, it can have more damage inland or deeper damage in some areas. We're also seeing some reduced drainage capacity in tidal areas and low-lying areas. And this is throughout the state. This is an issue that's happening not only in Sussex County, but also in Newcastle County, and some of our urban areas are also seeing this problem. When the tidal heights are higher, water has a harder time draining, particularly when there's some tide gates and some systems that were built a long time ago that didn't take this into account. And then we're having some increased infrastructure damage from some of these storms that are happening. Longer term, over decades, you know, we're going to continue to see these issues, but we're going to begin to see some conversion of dry land into open water, or conversion of wetlands into open water. We may start to see some water table impacts, and that's something we need to study a little bit more, which might reduce functionings of septic systems and wells. There may be some saltwater intrusion, which is salty water getting into either groundwater or surface water, which has some ramifications for drinking water and operation of infrastructure along the coasts and septic systems as well. And fishing, if you're a fisherman and some of the areas become more salty that used to be fresh that could have implications for the types of fish and species that hang out there. Of course, that's something that DENREC is very concerned about and that we'll be working on more. And all of these things, as you add them up over the years and the decades, they all have economic, social, and environmental impacts to everybody in the state, whether you live in Georgetown or whether you live in Newark or Newcastle or Lipsick. So we finished this vulnerability assessment. It's the biggest, best vulnerability assessment that has ever been done in the entire country. It's done statewide, which very few have been. We're very fortunate that we only have 3 counties, so doing a statewide assessment was a little bit easier for us than for others. But what we found is that up to 11% of the state's landmass could be permanently inundated by sea level rise. A lot of this is wetlands. Some of this is roadways, critical infrastructure, lots of homes. It impacts all 3 counties and 31 towns. I'm not going to go into the results of the vulnerability assessment a lot because I really only had 15 minutes. I'd be very glad to come back and talk about them in more detail at a later time. I'd be very happy to do that. But what we did was we took the vulnerability assessment. We looked at 79 different things, from roadways to houses to businesses to where areas where critters live to ports to, I said, roads, bridges, and decided what was of highest concern, because we can't work on 79 things all at once. We wanted to narrow the focus down. So statewide, the things that are most at risk from sea level rise include our industrial areas in northern Newcastle County. The Port of Wilmington is very, very vulnerable. Up to about 75% of its landmass could be inundated by sea level rise. Railroads, roads, and evacuation routes are very susceptible. Dams and dikes are very susceptible, and in fact, the city of Newcastle is working very diligently on improving their system of dikes that currently protects their town. Those dikes were initially built by the Dutch.
Dutch
in Newcastle, Swedes down here. Future development areas, the areas that are level 3 areas from the state strategies, we looked at those to see if there were inundation impacts in those areas, and there are significant areas of future development areas that could be impacted. Of course, this all has impacts on tourism, habitats, and then drinking water and wells were also a critical impact. So I'm going to skip about 30 slides of my normal presentation and go right into what you do about it. There's a range of things that you can do on the ground as these impacts happen or before they happen. Delaware residents do have a desire to have these problems taken care of before they start occurring. We did a survey that I'd be happy to share with you. You can do 4 primary things, and this is pretty simplistic. You can avoid the impacts. That might be a good strategy in level 3 areas where we don't have any critical infrastructure or homes yet. You can avoid placing things in areas at risk. You can move out of those areas. You can retreat away from the coast. And the Department of Natural Resources is pursuing this with a lot of our natural areas, our impounded areas. We're gonna retreat away. We're going to let nature take its course. You can accommodate. And this is what you're already doing a lot for flood mitigation. But if you're accommodating for sea level rise, you do it a little bit. You do it a little bigger, you do it a little better. Instead of raising your house a foot over base flood, maybe you raise it a foot and a half or 2 feet to give you a little bit of extra. And then protection, that's dikes, dams, berms, and beach replenishment. So we've actually been preparing and dealing with sea level rise with beach replenishment since before the Department of Natural Resources was put together. And so those are the 4 main things that you can do to prepare for and plan for sea level rise. And these are decisions that are going to be happening at mostly the local and individual level, right? The counties and the municipalities your primary responsibility is land use, and you make the land use decisions. So all of this is going to be happening on the ground at every level. What works for Bethany Beach may not work for Sussex County. What works for Newcastle probably won't work for Woodland Beach. So one of the things that I'm very keen on making sure is that all of the municipalities and counties have the information and knowledge that they need to make good decisions. And funding, which is a dicey issue as well. So we've done all this work, and what we're working on now is an adaptation plan. An adaptation is simply changing what we do to prepare, right? So we're gonna change a little bit to prepare for sea level rise. The plan itself will inform local responses and individual responses and state responses, but it will not dictate any responses. It will explain adaptation. We'll put forth some guiding principles that should be considered when doing adaptation on the ground. We'll do a couple case studies. There's some interesting things happening already in the state of Delaware that we're going to highlight. And we're going to have a list of resources and assistance for individuals and municipalities, whether it's funding or technical assistance or just guidebooks. But the meat of the plan is a series of recommendations that will increase our adaptive capacity. That's a really fancy way of saying improve our ability to respond and prepare, because there are some things that may be barriers to action. There's data gaps. So we've identified a lot of those through this planning process, and we want to sort of pave the Denmark doesn't like to talk about paving. We want to smooth the way so that locals and individuals can adapt. I need a boat metaphor for that. So if anybody has a good boat metaphor, we want to dredge the canal. We just came off a series of public meetings. Some of you may have been at them in February, where we showed the public 61 different options that could be included into this document. And the committee right now is looking at them and finalizing those options. They're under 7 basic categories, and you've probably seen these categories in every planning document that you've ever seen before in your life. We need to improve coordination and communication among state, local, federal agencies, provide increased regulatory flexibility, consistent policies for growth, increasing public awareness, improving the data sets that we have available to us to make decisions, providing technical assistance to agencies, local governments, and others, and expanding funding opportunities. Because doing these adaptation projects that you may choose to do is going to be a very expensive endeavor. And when you calculate up everybody doing adaptation at the same time, the funding need is going to be very great. There's no identified funding source for these right now, and the committee is not going to reach agreement on that. So highlights, and I gave Jeff, he may have already passed them out, the most recent list of options / recommendations that the committee will be hopefully finalizing on May 23rd at its meeting. I don't know what the exact number is. We're in the high 50s now. We've combined and pulled some things together. Improving data sets. Some of the recommendations will call for modeling stormwater, storm surges, and sea level rise together. We get that question a lot. The maps that we have for sea level rise don't include storm surge right now. So when you look at the maps that I have, it's just where the high tide line would be, not any storm. Developing groundwater and saltwater intrusion models. We don't yet have these. They're very important for looking at impacts to wells and to drinking water and to septic systems. Installing more tide and stream gauges and improving monitoring of sea level rise. We right now don't have enough information from our tide and stream gauges that will allow us to model some of these impacts in particularly areas in the inland bays. So we don't have good tide data, so we can't make the best models, and that's something we're very keen on improving. And doing a better job of monitoring some of our wetlands, which is where we're going to start really seeing some of the impacts first before it gets to the uplands. Technical assistance, incorporating sea level rise into regional planning efforts, and this is already happening in some respects. The All Hazards Mitigation Plan is going to have a section about sea level rise in the state. Improving permitting processes. We've identified a lot of places, and anybody who's ever worked with DLDOT and DENREC at the same time knows that sometimes our permitting processes don't work very well together, and we want to make sure that that works, particularly for adaptation projects. Technical assistance to agencies, counties, and coming up with a best management practice manual so that we can put forth some ways that communities and individuals can go about adaptation. Regulatory flexibility. We'd like to incorporate sea level rise into some existing regulations at a later date when we have enough data and information. So we highlighted the septic and well regulations. We highlighted Tidal Wetlands and Coastal Zone Act, but we don't yet have the information that would be required to incorporate this into that. So that would be, those would be activities that would likely happen maybe 5 or 10 years from now as that data became available and the regulators would know how to incorporate that into those decision making. An executive order for state agencies so that DENREC, DLDOT, and anybody else are playing well together off the same playbook for these issues. I don't know if anybody's noticed that sometimes we don't work together very well. This would be a step towards that. Regulatory incentives, finding ways to incentivize some of these actions. Expanding community septic systems to individual homes. We talked a lot about how septic systems may fail increasingly as a result of sea level rise and how we may need to come up with some innovative ways of helping those people as their septic systems fail. And particularly with DLDOT, coming up with some early permitting so that when there's a storm, instead of replacing something, a road in kind, which means replacing it as it was built before, which clearly didn't work if it got washed out in the storm, but having plans and having the procedure so that you can replace something better so that it can withstand the next storm, right? We don't want to keep building the same things over and over again. And then consistent policies and outreach activities, incorporating sea level rise into the strategies for state policies and spending, into local comprehensive plans as we can, into long-range transportation plans. Conducting some legal reviews. There's not a lot of good legal information right now or case law about sea level rise and what happens when, say, a landowner's land becomes inundated with seawater. And we think that that land actually would revert back to the state if it becomes inundated permanently. Mm-hmm. But we need to have a better job. And we've initiated some of that work already with Widener, just so we understand what the legal framework is right now. Outreach, and technical assistance to individuals, homeowner groups, organizations like yours. And then one of the things that we had lots of debate about, particularly at the public meetings, was this idea of real estate disclosure for sea level rise. The committee has decided to put that aside and not recommend any kind of real estate disclosure. But
may
instead,
I ask about that? Mm-hmm. I was with about 200 people last night at Cape High School talking about their sewer rates going up, and everyone has moved in, within the past couple of years, and almost all the comments were, we weren't told this, we weren't told that, and we have a lot of new people. So when the facts are in and it's concrete and we know exactly what we have on hand, I do think we should warn people.
And I think that's part of the discussion that the committee had, and that there was a lot of feeling that people should know, and people who are buying homes should do their due diligence and background checking. We know that that doesn't always happen. I have people in my neighborhood who moved in right next to a giant cargo train that goes by at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they had no idea there was a railroad next to their house. You know,
exactly would be disclosed, Jen?
Well, if we feel that certain areas are vulnerable and to flooding, they're getting new information. Maybe sea level rise isn't going to do anything. Maybe it will do something, but they don't have the facts yet.
So we have some state.
Why can't work together, Joe? Because they don't have no facts. They don't have no science. It's almost BS. To be honest with you.
Well, Sam, you don't have to worry about it in Georgetown. My district might be concerned with it.
Well, and I will say, again, that this is a statewide issue, and mm-hmm. that if it affects you in Lewis, it will affect the entire state, and that's what the committee is moving off of. We do feel that it's going to have statewide ramifications. We do feel that the science is sound. However, we do believe that there are ways to improve, and part of the reason... We have projections or scenarios that we're using to plan until 2100, right? That's a really long planning time frame. A lot can happen between now and 2100, and many of us will no longer be walking this planet in 2100. Some of the recommendations that we've put forward will help us do a better job of figuring out what level of sea level rise we may see closer in, so that we can give some better planning projections for, say, 2030, because right now I can't really give you a good idea of what it might look like in 2030. But we would like to be able to say, hey, there is a very good possibility that in 2030 you should be planning for 6 inches more of sea level, or 8 inches, or whatever. And those recommendations are geared so that we can start to put a finer resolution on those scenarios, which I know a lot of people do really, really want to have.
Mm-hmm. Is there a committee?
I'd like to make one comment. Man has been on this earth, according to the biblical, according to evolutionists, for millions of years. But according to the Bible, we've been here about 6,000 to 7,000 years. Now, we've been this long, and yet salt may intrude, may come in your toilet, just like it's going to happen in the next 10 years. It's been 7,000 years. We're thinking it might come. It's impossible to sit here and try to tell me it's going to do it in the next 10 years. If it hasn't done it in the last 7,000, why is it going to do it now, all of a sudden?
So thanks for that's a very good question and comment. And I do, there is sea level occurring in the state, and I didn't show you my graphs right now because I wanted to keep it as quick as possible. We have a documented level of sea level rise right now in the state that is 3.35 millimeters per year, or about 13 inches over 100 years.
It depends who's keeping score.
So the tide gauge in Lewis has been recording the tide levels since 1919, and it shows very distinctly that there is a level of sea level rise. When you talk to people who are living in coastal communities, they do believe that it's a problem. They're seeing some differences, even in the past 10 or 20 years. When you talk to people who are living in Southbridge, Wilmington, they are seeing some significant issues, and that's because the Christina River tide levels have come up and are no longer allowing places to drain. So this plan does not dictate any regulations, does not dictate anything to any local government, but what it does is it sets up a number of things that state agencies, local agencies, nonprofits can do together to make sure that those who want to plan for this can do so with the best tools available. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've really come through a very long process. We have, I think, a lot of very reasonable, flexible recommendations in place in this plan. And the ones that happen will happen because people want to work on them. When we're done with this plan, I will be putting together an implementation team of interested individuals, agencies, to go forward and get some of these things in place, the ones that are short-term actions that we can start doing, the ones that we may be able to get some grant funding for. A lot of the data, a lot of the tide gauges, a lot of the some of the legal work and some of the coordination and technical assistance work we can start doing right away. A lot of it, other ones have some prerequisite activities that would have to happen before we did them. Again, like any of the regulatory stuff would be
right.
Very far out, but mm-hmm. Something you want to keep kind of in the back of your mind as we move forward. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
When you began, when you began, we hadn't had the Sandy storm yet. I know that that's not what you're studying, a violent storm of that nature that we just missed, but that works with, like you said, it does work with sea level rise. Is there a group studying what happened in New Jersey to their beaches that are ruined now and what we can do to protect ourselves? Is there a group studying that?
There's a lot of groups throughout the Mid-Atlantic region, and I'm with the Coastal Management Program. We have colleagues in coastal management programs in New Jersey, in New York, in Virginia, and in Maryland and Pennsylvania, and we do work together to sort of share information.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I like to talk about is that you're gonna see sea level rise in these storms. That's when people are gonna notice.
Combined.
Like mm-hmm. I've never flooded before. You know, nobody told me. I didn't know I was in a flood prone area. So you're gonna see it in these storms that happen. But if we start planning, and what my personal goal is to start seeing people planning for the long-term effects of sea level rise,
mm-hmm.
which will help with the short-term effects of storms, but also give you a buffer so that your infrastructure can last longer, your homes can last longer. And right now, you know, we're planning for the base flood elevation. And the maps are being updated in Sussex County, and that's our shoreline and waterway management program, who we're going to be working together with to sort of bring our messages of long-term sea level rise and short-term storm surge together a little bit, because it can be a little bit confusing. Susan's talking about this, and you know, Mike, you're talking about this. But it's very important to think long-term, particularly when you are talking about maybe infrastructure that has a very long lifespan, when you're putting in a new wastewater treatment facility, when you're looking at where you might need to put people from septic onto city sewer, when you're looking at maybe placing a hospital or a school. Something with a long lifespan, I would suggest that you be as risk-adverse as possible in citing that. Or if you're building pumping stations, elevate them up 6 inches. Even if you use the existing rate of sea level rise to do that, you're still giving yourself a little bit of extra lifespan in that infrastructure that you're creating. And there's lots of short-term actions that can help with the impacts of storms and the extra sea level rise that you're seeing. And those are the things that are in the flood mitigation program that Mike Powell works on and in the community rating system. Mm-hmm. So elevating homes and building codes and drainage, good drainage practices and all of those things can help short term.
I went to the website that is provided through the state of Delaware under the Delaware Coastal Programs mm-hmm. and the Sea Level Rise Advisory Committee. Are you a participant in its updating? Do you provide information to this?
Yeah, to the website, yes.
I could not get into many of the meeting notes under the Society and Economic Work Group. It asks for a username and password. Are they?
No, they shouldn't.
Protected?
No, they shouldn't be. So do you have an iPad up there?
Uh-huh.
I wonder if there's some incompatibility issues. I will check.
I can get in quite a bit.
Okay.
In other
nothing that's on the web should be password protected. So there's got to be some issue in the tubes there. But I will go check and make sure that all of those links are working. And we have really tried very hard during the 3-year course to make sure that everything we do is available online to anybody who wants to see it.
Well, the other work groups have provided the ability. There is no password protection for the other work groups, but this Society and Economic Work Group is password protected. And I also noticed that particular work group does not provide the public with the members, the names of the members, as is provided in the other.
So that that is available in the vulnerability assessment document as well. Those work groups were disbanded quite a while ago, and so those sites haven't been updated. The last meeting of those particular work groups was probably maybe early 2012, late 2011.
I would imagine, though, that much information was derived through those work groups that went into the final document?
Into the vulnerability assessment, yes.
And where would the vulnerability assessment be?
So that is a really good question.
You don't know where it is?
He's one of our best.
Right here.
He's one
and
of our best.
And I clicked the slide there. And so the vulnerability assessment is de.gov/SLRVA.
It's list?
Online. Mm-hmm. It's online, and you have two more hard copies here today. It's a 2-volume set. It has a mapping appendix that has all the maps in it, and then the document itself is all of the words and some pictures. Thank you, Todd.
Can you get to the section where the members are shown for this?
Well,
I find it very interesting that in the other committees, at least, there's very few folks from business or the agrarian society.
So the work groups were made up of the Sea Level Rise Advisory Committee membership. So they sort of divided themselves into 3 groups so that we could work on that. There are 2 members on our committee from the ag sector, Pam Thornburg Baccarine, she got married recently, and Mark Davis.
Neither are vested, neither are stakeholders. One works for the Department of Agriculture,
mm-hmm.
and the other is the executive director of the Farm Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think she lives in Wilmington. That hardly is a good vantage point from the stakeholders. And
sure.
It's the stakeholders that are missing from everything that I found on the website. Now, maybe it's under the Society and Economic Workshop Group,
I don't think you're
really.
what we did to get public and stakeholder input is that all of the meetings are open to the public. We've had six very intensive public meetings over the past 2 years. The first was during the development of the vulnerability assessment, we had five public meetings that included presentations, interactive displays, workshops, computer models, and comment forms.
But with all due respect, I've got to tell you that once you get to that point where all that work has gone into it, you leave the public or the stakeholders no choice but to come in with almost an adversarial attitude. And I've seen it time and time again. If you want good information coming out, you need to have good information going in from the start.
Sure, and that's...
That is not in...
That's why we conducted the public meetings well prior to publication of the vulnerability assessment.
But
and if you look at that time,
a lot
timeline,
of the work had been done.
Well, sure, because in order to show the public anything, we had to do a significant amount of work so that we could.
And that work should have been done with stakeholders involved, if not in the majority, at least in a large percentage of representation.
We also had a public workshop in 2008 that was open to the public before we started the advisory committee, and I'd be happy to share the workshop proceedings with you on that. And we also conducted a statewide sea level rise and climate change opinion survey, and I'd be happy to share that with you as well. What we found out from the opinion survey, which was very robust, was that the large majority of Delawareans were in favor and supportive of planning for sea level rise and supported proactive actions to occur before sea level rise would happen. So we really did do our best. And that was all prior to the initiation of this
committee.
And that
sounds good, but as you know, the devil's in the details. And when you start setting down the regulations that are going to give some bite to this effort, that is where those stakeholders have to be involved. And the regulations are going to come that are passed by the state or DENREC or whoever are going to come guided by this document that is lacking, in my opinion. That's really, and I'm very concerned about the fact that this one committee, which would seem to be the one that should be full of stakeholders, is not even accessible on the website.
So I will go ahead and check that. But again, that work group stopped at the publication of the vulnerability assessment. We also had during the development of the options that we presented, we did have another stakeholder process, and we had six meetings where we invited additional stakeholders who were not members of the committee into a half-a-day workshop to work through some of these issues. And I'd be happy to forward you the information and the notes from those meetings, including the attendees from those meetings. The vulnerability assessment, and I understand that you're concerned about the agricultural sector, the vulnerability assessment ranked agriculture as a lower concern.
Yeah, of course.
Because the areas that could be inundated were largely fringe and low productivity, and this is from our agricultural representatives. We looked at high productive soils, and you'll see this in the vulnerability assessment. We looked at combined animal feeding operations. We looked at something else, and we found that it was a very low percentage.
I did say landowners. Agriculture, of course,
okay,
was mentioned, but landowners in general are a huge stakeholder in this county, and those tracts of land could be severely impacted by this effort, and they are the folks that you need to bring on board early so that you can find the compromises that will allow this to move through the process smoothly and for your own good.
I understand your concerns, and I do believe that this effort has done the best job that it possibly could, and certainly well better than a lot of other state initiatives to develop recommendations like these. These are just recommendations that go to Secretary Colin O'Mara. These are not, these do not become laws. They do not become regulations.
But
anything.
They are held up by the bureaucracy as the reason that regulations are implemented. And to discount them and their significance, I think, would be a mistake.
And I think that part of the reason that we've done this work is to point out the areas where some regulatory changes may need to happen so that people can be protected from sea level rise, so that their investments can be protected, and so that we can make good land use decisions. So we don't disagree on that point.
No, we already advanced 60% of the tax base comes from 1 mile off that beach, so that's very important, and it's mostly infrastructure, homes, and stuff like that. Very little agriculture. I agree with you 100%. And right now, we're doing things now. If you look at what happened in 62, it's not happened. You know, the devastation.
Sure.
Now, Jersey is a good example of some getting a direct hit. And I guess if you get a direct hit, I don't care how all the regulations in the world aren't going to really help you. But we've anytime you borrow money, a lender makes you, you know, get flood insurance if you're in a flood zone. So the flood zones require all this stuff. So we're doing a lot of this stuff. I mean, don't take offense. I think a lot of this is just feel good. I mean, it's the popular thing, the sea level rise. So let's get, you know, an organization start talking about it. But we are already doing so much currently. So, you know, I see just kind of poking along. I mean, it's years down the road before we see anything. And next time we do a land use plan, we'll consider it.
That would be
basically
great.
That's basically it. So I wouldn't read too much into it at this time because we got private property rights. People aren't going to stop building close to the water.
Sure.
They will build up because they're told to by different agencies and they know better. So I think the public's fairly educated at this point.
I think they are too, and I think a lot of more.
But a direct hit, all the regulations in the world aren't going to help.
If we get another storm of 62, or if we got a direct hit from Sandy, you know, we would be having a very, very different conversation.
Right.
But mm-hmm. those are normal nor'easters.
Interesting.
You know, three feet of storm surge. You know, we can do a lot for that, for you know, into several decades. So.
One thing that, you know, is very simple, and that is basements. You talk about people having basements in certain areas. And I've heard you shouldn't have them in Sussex County. We have one, you know, but it's got to be, you know, drained and dried out all the time because mm-hmm. things are wet. Do you ever deal with things like that?
Well, I don't deal with individuals right now. What I'm trying to do is make sure that all of
people,
our...
No, not people, but having basements in homes.
Well, and again,
homes.
that's a code, and a building code
okay.
decision at a local government level. And when we have maybe more information about what might happen with the water table,
mm-hmm.
if we have some very distinctive information that says we're going to have some significant water table rise in the next... you know, 30 years during the lifespan of a mortgage,
mm-hmm.
there may be local governments who may want to say, you know what, we're not going to allow.
So that would take care of it.
We might not want to allow basements in this region that
mm-hmm.
has been mapped
or to recommend
being,
it
being
even.
Vulnerable to that. So our job is to provide you with the best information that we can in the future and have you do what you will with it. And we're going to be doing that for Sussex County and for many municipalities. A lot of the municipalities are working on this very diligently right now. And we do have a grant program, should you wish to look at any of your building codes for these types of issues. And hopefully we'll have more funding starting in October. So I'd be happy to take any other questions now or later. I'll leave some cards. But again, you know, Sussex County has been a participant on this, and it has been very valuable to have Jeff talking with us about the Sussex County perspective, and I think it's been really very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm. I have 10,000 new people in my district, people who don't have the experience and knowledge that George has. He's been here. Your family's been here for years.
Got nothing to do with knowledge. I know this. In Bethany Beach, we don't have very many cellars, basements. In Fenwick Island, we don't. My mother has one in Rehoboth. It's dry as a bone. It depends on the land mass and how the elevations and all this stuff. And we have maps that show you that.
Right.
So
and
I mean, you don't have to be intelligent.
Like
you don't
a
have
mountain.
To be smart anymore. It's.
it would help sometimes.
I know, but
So let me know. I'd be happy to come when we're done the planning process. I'd be happy to come back. I'd be happy to do an hour-long thing on sea level rise for anybody who'd be interested or specific vulnerabilities in Sussex. Mm-hmm. But I think you've probably
we'll
heard
invite your testimony when we update the land use plan whenever it comes.
And I would love to come, and we can provide you with maps and all that stuff. We would be happy to do so.
If I understood you, you said that you had a lot of meetings where the public was invited. Mm-hmm. So people who hold thousands of acres of land, for instance, for development, they were welcome, I'm sure.
Yeah. And we spoke with several farmers. I sat down at a table with them, and they showed me where they're having land issues. And my take on it was that most people who came out were very concerned about this as a potential threat.
Okay. Good.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Love, I did pick up or mm-hmm. had got this, and this is what you're talking
yep,
about.
Yep, that's our first product, the vulnerability assessment.
And you say the members of your committee, which you were in charge of society mm-hmm. and economy, mm-hmm. would be founded mm-hmm. here? Is it in the main synopsis of yours?
It should be in one of the appendices.
I've seen it on the website.
So whichever one says advisory committee members, I think they're there, and the work group members are also listed.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You.
Thank you for inviting
Thank you.
Me.
Thank you for your time. Anyone else from the committee?
I'd like to hear Mr. Collins if he has anything.
Mr. Collins, you have any comments, or are you okay?
Rich.
I'm asleep.
That's a question, but we're not going to
give him three minutes.
That's good.
I want
to. You got a 3-minute egg timer here. Don't exceed it.
I'll make something very, very short. First of all, I want to say that Susan Love is really a wonderful person to work with and very open, giving me free rein to be as disruptive as I wish to be, which occasionally is somewhat. We just need to keep things in perspective. The storm of 62, probably the highest tide we ever had. I don't agree. Here's one thing I don't agree with, that it necessarily will be very expensive. Was the storm of 62 expensive? Sure, when it happened, destroyed most of the buildings that were impacted. But what happened after that? We reconstructed, built modern structures, but practically everything in those areas are built since that time, and we have generated unbelievable economic activity. It is the nature of things, particularly commercial buildings, to go away very rapidly. Look at the DuPont plant in Seaford. I went by Hammond Cadillac today. It's now a bare patch of ground in Milford. The sea level rise is nothing new. The Henlopen Lighthouse fell into the sea in 1926. Indian River Inlet Bridge, 1946. Sharp's Island into Chesapeake Bay disappeared around 1900. People lived on that place, hundreds of them. It's a natural thing. We've always dealt with it before. And we're going to have to deal with it in the future because sea level rise absolutely is occurring. It's a scientific fact. Been going on ever since the last ice age. Hope that sea level rise doesn't stop, because if it does, it probably means another ice age is starting. And believe me, that'll be a whole lot less pleasant.
So are you saying that we should encourage our state and federal regulators to get busy creating new regulations to protect us?
He doesn't like regulation. Yeah.
The thing that I've simply said on the committee over and over and over again, I think Susan would agree with me, we have always shown the ability to deal with it ourselves in the past. I think we can in the future as well. Not only that, but there's, I believe, a very large misperception about the cost of having beachfront properties. I've heard many people say, well, if we're going to have properties on the beach, I don't want to have to pay for it when they flood. The truth of the matter, folks, is that according to the Department of Natural Resources, every flood insurance claim ever made in Sussex County is paid for with 1 year and 2 months of premium. If you take away the beach towns, this is memory now, so don't hold me right to it, but Millsboro and Milford that have rivers running right through the hearts of town, they have fewer than one claim a year. The vast majority of other inland towns have virtually none. And then the coastal communities even, If I remember right, the worst of them may have on an average maybe 5 claims in a whole year. But the 30, what is it, from 1978 to 2010, what is that, 32 years? 1 year and 2 months premium pays for every claim we've ever had in this county.
Yeah, and, but right, not in the future.
Right. Well, we don't know that.
Oh, the rates are going up.
As far as the last thing I'll say is, the FEMA has just modified the flood maps. You can talk to Jeff back here, and they've actually lowered the risk level on quite a few of the maps now.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rich.
I'd like to say something about, nobody's Steve. Talking about running people off the beach. That's our source of income. And what I'm hearing is that we need to know what may happen and prepare for it in just common sense. I can tell you my insurance company knows a lot more than I know, because I think it's 4 or 5 years ago they told me, you live near the beach and it's $2,000 deductible on any damage to your roof, and I was kind of shocked. They know a lot, and I think that it's good that we also know. So.
Anything else from council? Mr. Lawson.